your phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life. Ooh. Go get your butt off of that lazy couch. Put down a laptop and get out of that house. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life.
This is Simple Life. Welcome to our show. It's Saturday and it's the 22nd of June. We are here on KRXA 540 AM and we're live in studio. I have a local with us today. Tom is a local businessman and now author, but you might really remember him through the Hollywood movie Yours, Mine, and Ours, starring Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda back in 1968. It was a story about a couple who met later in life, each having about 10 kids. And the storyline follows the blending of the families with so many children. It was just a pitfall of situations that were both heart-tugging and also really, really funny in some cases. But Tom has written a book titled True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours, where he tells the real story, essentially, about his personal experience and his harrowing survival. He's preparing for his book launch in a few weeks, and he is my guest today on Simple Life. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Cynthia.
It's really nice to have you in studio. We've known each other through the bookstore off and on for years, and I know you've been a local for years. I don't know how many years.
Well, I grew up in Carmel.
Uh-huh.
Came to Carmel in 1961 when my mother, Helen North, married Frank Beardsley.
Got it.
And brought her eight children to Carmel to combine her eight children with his 10 children. And being good Irish Catholics, they subsequently had two more.
Of course they did. Well, it makes a nice round number.
It does.
Well, I remember seeing the movie with Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda, and I just loved it, I have to tell you. But after meeting you and hearing a little bit about your real life experience as a member in that famous family, I get a very different impression of the Beardsley family. Let's just for a moment listen to a clip, and I'm not sure if I can do that clip here. Hang on one second. Well, why don't you, while we're setting this up, this is the clip that is about the show's beginning. I know that you're familiar with not only the real life experience, but also the movie. How did that all come about? Obviously, if your mom was here since early 60s, they were aware of the movie being written. How did that sort of transpire?
Yeah, so what happened is that the combination of two large families was a public interest event. And it made the national news and was in newspapers all over the country. Lucille Ball saw the story in the newspaper and called my mother and said, I'd like to make a movie about your family. And of course, this was the time of Ozzie and Harriet, Leave It to Beaver, My Three Sons. It was really the era of the white American suburban family.
Right.
And so Lucy asked my mother to write a book, actually, and then they would base a movie on her book.
Well, here we are. We're going to listen just for a minute to Yours, Mine, and Ours.
I have eight children.
Eight children? Will you hear what I have to tell you?
What?
I have 10 children.
10?
I'm glad I have 10 children.
And I'm glad I have my eight.
And I'm glad I'm careful.
It's a typical wedding. Enemies of the bride on the right, enemies of the groom on the left.
We won't be a family. We're going to be a freak show.
People kept staring as if they thought we were crazy.
They didn't get any argument from me.
So there's a fun memory lane walkabout. And just wanted to ask you, Tom, about the inference to there being a conflict between the Beardsleys and the Norths.
Well, the conflict between the Beardsleys and the Norths was not a major feature of the film. The emphasis that Lucy created was on the blending of the two families, and there was a little bit of conflict or competition,
tension
there. And then the character of Frank Beardsley, played by Henry Fonda, stepped in the film and said, "We're going to be one big happy family
right,
now."
I remember that.
Yeah.
Right.
And so he was portrayed as a very wise, very loving, very caring, very sensible human being.
Right. Henry Fonda style. Mm. So the fact that Frank Beardsley actually was a member introduced into your world implies that your father was no longer in the picture.
Correct. That's a good point. My father was a Navy aviator, and he was flying experimental aircraft in the post-Korean War U.S. Navy. And so he was killed when this experimental aircraft called an A-3D, which was a fighter bomber designed for aircraft carriers. And it was not a well-designed airplane, and it crashed, and two of the three crewmen, he was among them, he was killed. So, and the irony is that when he found out that my mother was pregnant with his eighth child, he had gone to his commanding officer and said, "Find me a desk somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't belong. I don't belong flying these experimental aircraft with seven children and one on the way." And so the commanding officer did not accept his resignation, and 6 weeks later he was dead.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
We're in studio today with local Tom North, businessman and author. This is Simple Life, and I'm your host this hour, Cynthia Fernandez. So Tom, I want to ask you, what age were you when you lost your dad?
I was 6 years old.
Do you remember anything?
I remember him quite well.
Really?
He was gone a lot. He was gone a lot on maneuvers in the post-Korean War Asian military theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would, as children, we would watch the films that he sent home of Far Eastern tourist sites.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful fun. And then he would hand his camera to one of his friends and get into the picture, and we would all yell, "There's Daddy!"
"There's Dad!"
Yeah, and so it was a lot of fun. But so when he was home, he was a wonderful, wonderful human being. A lot of fun. He taught his children a lot about life, and while we were in his presence, we were delighted. He was a great man.
I'm so glad for you that you have that reference point. Yeah. So you've described briefly to me that there was some mental instability with your stepdad, Frank Beardsley. What first indicated that for you?
So actually, his energy was so negative that it was difficult to be around him without being cautious. I'm not sure how his mental instability would be diagnosed today officially, but I just refer to him as being psychotic. He was a very dangerous person to be around.
Quick changes.
A very quick changing, and he would find excuses to abuse people.
Uh-huh. And so when you first figured that out, how did you respond at the time? I mean, you're a child.
Well, I was a child, and so I was already reeling from the death of my own father, which actually made me physically ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I was physically ill for months after his death. I was 6 years old. I had no way to express the internal emotions that I was experiencing.
Right.
And 6 year olds have a very difficult time articulating that, or at least this 6 year old did.
Right.
And so when I came into Frank Beardsley's presence, and he would remind us that we were nothing without the other children. That's not a really good thing to tell children, is that they're nothing. So he was also very, very quick to violence. And so we learned to stay out of his way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a get tough or die environment. And so I learned very quickly just to not be around, to be out in nature.
Oh, that was probably your saving grace.
It was my saving grace. I still love natural environments, but I was very fortunate to have the beach and the ocean not far away. I had the Carmel River about a mile away and the forests, and I was really fortunate to have those resources to draw on to create some sense of sanity mm-hmm. where the domestic environment was seriously insane.
Mm-hmm. I had a childhood, you just reminded me, very similar in the respect that it was not safe to be seen or heard. And I, too, took solace outside. I mean, I used to just stay outside, even if there was nothing yes. to do. And I remember thinking at a very young age, at least in nature, I know what's true. Nature doesn't lie.
That's a good point.
And it was, I, you know, often had thought of myself as an adopted kid that, you know, I just need to find my own way. Did you ever feel that?
Oh, yes. And actually, I really thought about running away once.
Uh-huh.
When I was 7, I thought, this is getting too crazy, and I think I'll run away. So the difficulty with that was that in a very large household, all of the food comes in bulk. So I grabbed a 5-pound block of butter and put it in my backpack, and then I grabbed a loaf of bread and put it in my backpack.
That's pretty good thinking.
I was on my way.
Yeah.
But things really broke down when I got to the 50-pound tin of peanut butter. I wasn't quite sure what to do with that.
I'm not sure you could lift that at 7 years old.
I decided running away wasn't such a practical idea.
Now, were you close to your mom?
I tried to be close to my mom. My mom was not a very affectionate person. In fact, I had a conversation with one of my younger brothers recently, and he thought very seriously. He said, you know, I don't remember in my entire life ever receiving a hug from my mother. I don't ever remember receiving a hug from my mother. So she was a very well-intentioned person.
Right.
But she really was not a very nurturing person.
Sounds as though she were a bit absent.
Well, she was absent, but she was wonderfully in love with my father, and I loved watching them
together
as a couple.
Yeah.
And they were affectionate with them, with each other and with their children, and there was a lot of laughter and a lot of love in the home. And then when he died, she really internalized. She didn't know how to deal with that. She was not emotionally prepared, and she just sort of withdrew within herself. And when she met Frank Beardsley, she shared with me later in life that the reason she married him was she was afraid he was going to kill his children.
Oh, no.
And so she married him.
To protect his kids?
To protect his kids from him.
Oh.
And being the good Irish Catholic woman that she was.
It's a duty.
It's a duty. Not only is it a duty, but she was certain that she could save him from himself.
Well,
we know how that goes.
That is a common
yes.
myth.
Yeah, it is. And women often look at men and say, oh, I can fix this problem.
You know, there's another component that I'm remembering, because let's all just remember back to the 60s, early 70s. The equal rights for women wasn't in place. And if you had a string of kids, certainly not in place. And so marriage was a way, perhaps the most often used method of really basically providing for your family.
Yes, it was. And it was far more structured than it is today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as many freedoms and choices.
No.
Yeah.
No. So there was a serious challenge that she took on in adopting these children and taking on this man who was seriously mentally imbalanced, emotionally imbalanced. And there were times when I'd be walking down the hall and he would just knock me across the room, and I would stand up and say, what was that for? And he would say, just for drill.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because that's who he was.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. So my mother was really, one of the ironies of the family situation was that she did bring a breath of fresh air into the lives of his children.
Mm-hmm.
But what she did on the other side with her own children is she took her own eight children into a very dangerous environment, and she lost control of it. She abandoned her children in that environment. So it was a tough thing. thing for her. It was a difficult situation for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a mentor or another kind of a safe relationship that you could turn to for support or for sounding board?
That's an interesting question, Cynthia. For a long time, her brothers and sisters, and she came from a family of eight children herself, so she had her brother Bob and her sister Kay around quite a bit. And so they were, number one, they were trying to get her not to go into this
marriage. Into the marriage.
Yeah.
They could see
what
was happening.
Yeah, they could see what was happening, and he didn't fool anyone. In fact, we'll get back to Lucille Ball in a moment on that. But they tried to convince her not to marry this man, and when she was insistent, they still supported her. And eventually, Frank Beardsley banned them from the household because he didn't want their interference. He didn't want them, he didn't want their energy in his household.
Well, that would interrupt his total control and complete power.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it is amazing that you are still sitting here. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with Tom North, local businessman of True North, a shocking true tale of survival. Stay with us. We're back in the studio here with Tom North, local businessman and author of True North, and we're having a really enthralling conversation. I want to play a quick quip for you, and then we'll talk about it. Listen in.
That's fine. All right, children, finish up your problems and bring in your papers.
Good Catholic school.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Philip, you didn't sign your paper properly. Your name is Philip North.
I'm Philip Beardsley. We all went to church when we were all married. I'm Philip Beardsley.
No, dear, not legally. And we must sign our legal names in school, mustn't we?
Beardsley.
No.
No, dear.
No.
No.
Look at all that writing on the chalkboard.
That's pretty funny. He's writing his name, Philip North, 100 times. With the sister.
I got here as fast as I could, Sister Mary. What is it this time?
Why don't you ask Philip?
Philip? Darling, what happened?
Nothing.
Who did that to you?
One of the kids. She started. He says I'm not legal.
What?
And Mike isn't my brother.
Of course he's your brother.
Then my name is Philip Beardsley.
Philip North.
There she goes again.
That's pretty funny. So that is your younger brother, Philip.
Yes, that's correct.
And was this a truism? Did this really happen?
No. So Lucille Ball made a very warm funny movie. It was very entertaining, but it was a Hollywood production and it was a complete fantasy.
Got it.
They got the logistics of the film correct, the logistics of raising 20 children in a household correct, and the whole idea of buying food for that many is quite a chore, and keeping shoes on their
feet.
Organization. So they got that part right, but beyond that, it didn't resemble my experience.
Now, you mentioned something to me during the break about Lucille Ball. I would love for you to share with our listeners.
So Lucille Ball, as actors often do, came to learn her role, and her role was the role of Helen Beardsley. And so she came to study my mother, Helen North Beardsley, and after she had been in the house for a couple of hours being around the family environment, being around Frank Beardsley, she came up to my mother and she said, "You keep that man away from me."
Oh my. She was very clear.
She was very clear, and she was a very good judge of people. And she was, I remember watching her as a child and remarking that she was so sharp and so businesslike.
Yeah.
Very alert.
Yes.
Yeah. And so she picked up on his energy right away.
Right away. Well, I have, I'm happy to hear that. I've always enjoyed Lucille Ball. So I understand that your family was well known in this area, having been here for so many years. Does that present a challenge at all for you to be bold with your story?
You know, it's a great question, Cynthia, because in chapter 26 of the book, True North, there is a session of family therapy that takes place. And during that family therapy, a lot of things were aired, and it was a fascinating experience and a wonderful part of the book, actually. Following that experience of family therapy, there were several of us who resolved never to support the fantasy of yours, mine, and ours ever again. And in subsequent conversations, when I would be talking with people and they would say, oh, you know, wasn't that wonderful to be part of that family? And I would say, well, if it was appropriate, I would tell them the actual story. And so several people came back to me and said, you know, based on what you shared with me, I went and addressed issues in my own family and got closure.
Mm.
And thank you for sharing that with me.
You know, I have the same feeling in terms of your willingness and articulation to write a book and have that actually kind of be out there. I mean, it's very personal. Obviously, it's your life story and that of your family. And just to be right up front and have it out there for scrutiny, you know, for the health of it, for you, and how much permission that gives everyone else who hears it or reads it and resonates.
And there have been about 30 people who have reviewed the book at this point. Overwhelmingly, they come back, and it's so interesting to me. Their feedback has been very positive, and they have thanked me overwhelmingly for writing this story because there was some connection in their lives that they made as a result of reading this book. And they say, you know, I never really got that, but now having read your book, I get it. And I had one friend who is a psychotherapist,
mm-hmm.
and an energy healer and a wonderful man. And he came back to me and said, you know, having read your book, I now understand my relationship with my father better. Thank you for writing this book.
We're in studio today on Simple Life with Tom North, local businessman and author of True North, the real shocking truth about yours, mine, and ours. And we will have this in the bookstore this weekend. Just been released, hasn't it, Tom?
It has. The book I now have copies available. We've been in the review process until now.
Sure. And so if people come into the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, they will see your new book, both in the front window and on the front table. And we're preparing for an event in a few weeks. We'll be hosting a book signing event for Tom North on July 12th. Thank you. 6 p.m. Okay, 6 p.m. I think it's 6 to 8, and it'll be hosted across the street from the bookstore at the Carmel Art Association Gallery. So if you need any other information, give us a call at the store, 831-624-4955. So I know one other thing about you that it means a lot to me. The first time I met you, you came into the bookstore, gosh, I can't remember how many years ago, maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and you were talking about a group that you had been part of pulling together in the area with business people, and they were called SOBs.
Yes, they are, and they're all SOBs. Yeah.
And SOB stands for spiritually oriented business people. And I was so taken with that because at the time, you know, in the bookstore, we're really very conscious about how we wanted to express our spirituality, our respect for community and interest in community by our business. And that was really something that you actually validated when you came in. How did that come about for you? What motivated that?
Well, I wasn't really the founder of the SOBs. The SOBs was founded by a man named Rick Moss.
Oh, I know Rick.
Yeah, Rick
I
is
didn't
a,
know that.
Rick is a, has his PhD in education.
Sure.
And actually started the SOBs back in the late 80s, early 90s. And I helped him run it for about 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And then it seemed that it was time to take a hiatus from it. So we put it to bed for a while. And then in 2006 or 2007, we decided to resurrect it. And the SOBs was really a forum for business people such as accountants or lawyers or doctors or whomever to come and have a place where they could kind of let their freak flag fly a little bit. And, you know, people who are in kind of very traditional professions and who might suffer from some kind of spiritual separation. You know, it's not necessary to separate our professional lives from our spiritual lives. And that's the whole idea of the SOBs, is to say, hey, stay integrated,
yeah.
Stay spiritual all day long.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you are or what you're doing, we are all spiritual beings. Don't abandon that mm-hmm. just because you're in a business environment.
Exactly. That is so awesome. And spiritual doesn't mean that you have any particular religious agenda.
No.
I mean, you could have a religion, you could have a family religious practice, but maybe your spirituality is much more a neutral place where you just acknowledge how all of life is sacred, you know?
And spirituality is not a belief system. Spirituality is a way of being.
Mm-hmm.
Spirituality is our essential nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Very much. So, you know, it strikes me as I'm sitting here with you that you're someone with an excellent life. I mean, I know you've had a very successful family life. I know your wife and daughter, business life. You're man about town. People know you pretty much everywhere you go. And I'm just kind of struck wondering what you attribute that to, given the truth about your early life.
You know, the path that I've taken has been sort of, I guess you could say, and I don't want to be too cliche, but it's sort of the road less traveled.
Uh-huh.
I'm a 1979 graduate of Maharishi University of Management, and then I went straight into the securities industry, where I've spent my entire professional life. So I know a lot of people around town simply from my professional work and simply being a resident of Carmel since 1961. So I also am a member of the Carmel Rotary Club. So I know a lot of business people.
Right.
And see a lot of people I know in the grocery store and that sort of thing. You know, it's a very small town.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, given the experience that you had with the abuse while growing up, the loss of your father, and this incredible situation, highly structured, that you were confined in, where would you say you draw your guidance? What gives you hope, or gave you hope all that time?
Wow, that's a great question. I was a disaster as an adolescent and as a young adult. I was really, I had a very difficult time, and that involved drugs. Of course, it was the late 60s and the early 70s, and there was a lot of social experimentation with drugs and alternative lifestyles, and so I plugged right into that. But not long after, I learned to practice transcendental meditation, and that was really the saving grace. For me, I was guided into that. I don't take responsibility for actually looking for something mm-hmm. to help me. It came along through a friend, and I took to it like a duck to water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still meditate today, every day, twice a day. I do my TM, and I love it.
So for people who are listening who hear you talk about meditation but perhaps don't have their own meditative practice, meditation, correct me if I'm wrong, in your experience, you basically unplug from the outer world and then really centralize your focus on your breathing and get very still and settled. And from there, I think people have different experiences.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
I think that, but all meditations have the same goal, whether it's a breathing meditation or there's really three kinds of meditation. There's concentration, contemplation, and then mantra or transcendental meditation. And they all have the same goal, which is to experience our essential nature, which is silence. And that is where the bliss is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we experience the joy of divine love.
Right.
And that's the goal. Throughout time, the great saints and sages have all said this, and that's our experience when we meditate.
Does so that really helps clear the deck.
Yes, it really does. It clears the deck, it quiets the mind, it quiets the body.
Hmm.
And if you think about it for a moment, when we go to sleep at night, the goal is to quiet the mind, quiet the body, and get some rest.
That's very true.
Yeah. And meditation is similar in that respect, but very different in its goal and very different in its intensity. Science shows through thousands and thousands of studies that meditation actually is a deeper form of rest than sleep.
I have heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's different brain waves that are activated are measured during meditation as opposed to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation was very, very useful for me and very, it was really, I would have to say, the saving grace in my journey towards wellness and in my recovery, which is ongoing today.
Mm-hmm.
It's when one recovers from domestic violence and child abuse, it takes one day at a time, and it's never ending.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to remind ourselves every single day to just put one foot in front of the other and be centered.
Mm-hmm. Be here now.
Be here now.
We're in studio today with Tom North, local businessman and author. His book, titled True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours, is going to be on sale in the bookstore at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden this weekend. So please come on by and take a look at that. And we'll have more time with Tom right after this message. We're in studio today with Tom North, a local businessman and author of True North, his newly released book. This is Simple Life, and I am your host, Cynthia Fernandez. Thanks for joining us. So, Tom, I wanted to ask you about your love of the ocean. I happen to know that you occasionally go out for deep sea fishing, and you have incredible experiences that I've only heard the briefest stories from. But where did the love of the ocean come from for you?
I went to the ocean to save my soul, to create some sanity when the domestic environment was less than sane, was crazy.
Right.
And so I went to the ocean and I fell in love with the ocean. Now, of course, I had been around the ocean from a very early age, from the age of about 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a place where I felt safe.
And free.
And free. And I was able to simply relax and be myself at the ocean. And I met some wonderful people on the ocean, people who were fishing off the rocks at Carmel Point. And these are fabulous characters that I write about in my book. And they were good people, and they were very good to me, and they taught me things that I would not have learned otherwise. But I graduated from fishing on the rocks to free diving and spearfishing in Carmel Bay during the 1960s, and then I learned to scuba dive, and I began going down to the Channel Islands off of Santa Barbara and learning to dive for lobsters and catching lobsters. And there was one particular event that occurred not too long ago that was a lot of fun. I looked over at a little patch of sand, and sitting in the sand was a decrepit-looking lobster that was about 4 or 5 pounds in size. So it's
wow.
a good-sized lobster.
Yeah.
And it's all of its legs were broken off. One of its antennas was completely missing. Even the base of the antenna was missing, and
wow.
it was covered with barnacles. And I thought it was a molt or a shed, because lobsters shed their exoskeleton every year as they grow.
Uh-huh.
And they will continue to shed and grow and shed and grow effectively forever until some natural predator or some natural, maybe a parasite or something, kills them and ends their life. But theoretically, no one really knows how long lobsters can live, and there are lobsters that have been measured at 150 years old.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so I saw this, and I thought it was a shed, and it was in such bad shape, I went over to take a good look at it. And as I approached it, the remaining antenna moved. And I thought, oh, you poor thing, you're still alive. And so I wasn't that sympathetic, because I'm collecting these lobsters to eat them.
I see.
And I saw this lobster, and it had a pretty good-sized tail
okay.
on it. So I thought, well, I'm sympathetic, but not that sympathetic. I'm going to put you in my bag. So I took it home. I've always wondered, when a lobster suffers an injury,
right.
how long does it take to recover from that? How long does it take to grow a new appendage?
So they regrow their...
They regrow everything.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I wondered, how long does that take? Is it one molting cycle, which is about a year?
Okay.
Or is it two or three? I don't know. But I have a home aquarium. And so I put that lobster in my home aquarium just to see how, if it would survive, number
sure.
one. And number two, how long would it take to molt? 2 weeks later, I came home, and the lobster was upside down and clearly dead.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, you poor thing, you didn't even have enough energy to molt.
Yeah.
And so I got my little forceps, and I pulled it out, and I realized it was a molt. And I looked on the other side of this rock in the aquarium, and there was this brand new lobster.
Oh, my.
It was transformed from a victim of some violence to a brand new lobster with two antennas and all eight legs. Everything was renewed.
That's fabulous.
And so the answer to my question was, it takes one molting cycle.
Yeah, to regrow everything.
To regrow everything.
And how metaphorical that you would have that experience.
It is more metaphorical because every one of us has that opportunity to, if we have been the victim of some kind of trauma in our lives, to regenerate ourselves.
Right.
And,
right.
And there's the metaphor. We don't have to stay victims. We can regrow every single part of ourselves that is damaged.
And so you have. At least it seems to me.
And that's the point of the book. The point of the book is that every one of us can take the broken pieces of our lives, whether they be legs or arms or antennas, and we can regenerate ourselves and be happy people.
I totally agree. And I'm so glad, Tom, that you're willing to share your story with all of us. Tom North, author of True North, is here with us in studio today on Simple Life, and we are going over just a ton of different experiences you've had, and I want to applaud you again for your tenacity and your courage to stay afloat.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Yeah, for sure. So what are your aspirations going forward?
Well, I have about a dozen books inside me, and so I'm working on my next project, which is a book called The Economics of Spiritual Transformation. And it's all about the role of money and wealth in our spiritual lives. And so that's my next project, and I have quite a few beyond that. I have a book that I am is in the design stage, which is called The Richest Man in China.
Mm.
And that's a fascinating story that was shared with me by a friend of mine who happened at one time to have been the richest man in China.
It sounds like, Tom, you're at a place in your life where you're giving back. Is that a fair estimation?
I feel so grateful to life itself for giving me the opportunity to regenerate, to become the person that I have always wanted to be. And of course, we have that experience or that opportunity every single day, is to be the person that we want to be. And so that's not someone in the future.
Right.
That's who we are right now.
Right. And we need more of that attitude, I think, in the world. You know, there's a whole lot of news on regular news channels about conflicts all over the world, not to mention right here in our own state, in our own backyard. And if we all recognized and really accepted the fact that we have some choices, we may not have all the choices we wish we had, but with the choices we have, we can take those lemons, basically, and make lemonade. You know, there are things you can do. You don't have to respond with violence or retaliation.
Such a critically important point. Every one of us makes a decision on how we're going to respond to stimulus, whatever that might be. And unfortunately, every one of us is born with, I don't want to get into a discussion about past impressions and karmas and so on, but we are born into this world with an essential nature, which is, it's bliss, it's divine. And unfortunately, if we do not receive the proper nurturing along the way, that essential nature of bliss can get shrouded over, it can be covered or suppressed, and we can forget who we are. Most of us do, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our journey in life, is to rediscover ourselves and decide who we want to be, and then be that person every moment of every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a very difficult thing for someone who is carrying a lot of emotional baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another decision we have to make. What are we going to do with that baggage? Well, there are lots of ways that we can deal with that. We can get help. And that's why I wrote this book, is True North is about getting help and recovering from difficulty in life and moving beyond it, and not being depressed or suppressed or repressed by the difficulties of a difficult early childhood.
We're in studio today with Tom North, a local businessman and author of True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours. He was a real Beardsley North family member, and I want to just remind listeners once again that the book is on sale at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden. We have an event coming up with you, Tom, next month, July 12th, on a Friday. And it will be held across the street from the bookstore at the Carmel Art Association from 6 to 8 p.m. There'll be a lecture and book signing there. And it is a free event.
It is a free event.
It is a free event. So please join us and come and check out the bookstore if you haven't seen it already in the Secret Garden, which is a wonderful place to wander through. But before we get too far, Tom, I want to ask you, as I do most of my guests on the show, about your favorite book of all time.
I love that question. My favorite book of all time is The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell.
And why? What's your thrill about that?
The thrill about that is that what Joseph Campbell writes is that each one of us is the hero in our own story.
Oh, I love it.
And if you ask people who's the most important person in the world, they might say, you know, the president or the pope or something like that, you know. But really, each in our own lives, each of us is the most important person. And which is the subject of another book I want to write called The Most Important Person in the World.
Mm.
But I think that Joseph Campbell was speaking to each of us when he wrote his book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and I just love that book.
It's a classic. We are never without that book, by the way.
That's
so
good.
I'm so tickled that you have that one as your favorite book of all time. And what are you reading now?
I'm reading a wonderful book by Dr. Mark Gaffney called Your Unique Self.
That's a great book, too.
It really is. And so I have been on a journey to enlightenment my whole adult life, and it is the journey into now. And Mark Gaffney takes that idea and takes it one step farther. It's in the Eastern traditions, there is the concept of oneness, or the cosmic self, the self that is universal. And what Dr. Gaffney says in his book is that although that is true, we never lose our individuality. Even as we express the divine, we express the divine through our own unique way. And mm-hmm. that's the unique self. And it's a wonderful book. And he is such a brilliant theoretician and thought leader.
He's also one of the members of the Center for World Spirituality.
Yes.
Yes, we've actually hosted Mark in a book signing just maybe a month or two ago. And I completely agree with your perspective on him. He was just a delight and so upbeat and cheerful, you know?
Yes.
Important things to talk about don't have to be serious and heavy.
No. No, they can be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And so here we are at the end of our hour. Do you have any closing suggestions if someone who's listening is in trouble? Just real quick.
Two things. I would say if you're in trouble and you are having difficulty with your own emotional state, get help. There are many things that you can do. If you're a man and you're local, go to Breakthrough for Men. It's a wonderful organization, and they can help you deal with perhaps emotions that you're struggling with yourself. If you're a woman, there's Break Free for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a graduate of Breakthrough for Men. And I just can't say enough good about that. That it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. The other thing is that if you have a tendency to take your difficult emotions out on other people, stop and breathe.
Right.
Just breathe, and as much as you can, center yourself and think before you act.
Very wise.
Focus on your breath.
Very wise. Well, Tom, it's been such a delight to have you on my show. Thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story.
Cynthia, it's been a joy. Thank you for having me here.
And so, listeners, join us again next Saturday, 4 o'clock, on Simple Life, Stories for the Adventurous at Heart. We'll talk to you then. Zabadab, 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 zabad